Jaime Carrasco, Senior Portfolio Manager with Carrasco Wealth Management at Harborfront. Welcome to the Confident Investor. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me back, and what a year we're celebrating here as gold and silver bugs. Finally, an amazing year.
Absolutely. I think, obviously I want to do a bit of a year in review, but for a little bit of context, of course, we're recording this on Monday, the December 22nd. Gold and silver both hit new all-time highs as we came into this morning. So looking back over 2025, Jaime, what were the big themes that really mattered and had the most impact over this year?
Well, the big things that matter, let's wait a second on that. I think what's important, we just posted our first return since we moved over to Harborfront throughout this year on December 1st for our conservative portfolio, which was up 40, over 40%, finally beating the benchmark. What's important about that is that, first of all, the lows of the last 3 years, I don't think we'll ever see them. We also chose that date because that was by the run-up to October. We had a pullback, everybody ran away, and we thought, we held fast to our positions. We continued to strengthen our positions, but it didn't pull back. The gold held around 4,000, went sideways, silver broke out. And what's important is that that sets the base from where we're starting the next leg up. The easy money was the hard money, which was the last 3 years of building positions. We're never going to see that bottom again. We're never going to see some of the great stocks we own at the prices we had them. We built that nice base around December, and now we're taking off, especially today. Look at gold. We're back above 4,400, which is an all-time high. Canadian dollar, $6,000. Silver sorry.
Just over $69 US.
That's right, $69. Sorry, my computer was hiding my quote. But in Canadian dollars, over 90, right? And I keep mentioning the Canadian dollar because people have to understand that gold, silver's following, but gold is not going down. It's the currencies that are going down, right? And that's important. Now, why is that? It's the big story of the year that nobody's talking about, the elephant in the room, what's happening to the credit cycle, what's happening to long-term interest rates, what's happening with Japan, right? The geopolitics are noise, but they're also fueling that debacle that's happening with the long-term rates, right? And why is that important? JP Morgan, gold is money, everything else is credit. So I keep saying, and I've been preparing for a long time, for something that most financial advisors and portfolio managers in North America don't yet even see, which is we're witnessing the end of the petrodollar, of the monetary system, the fiat credit system that we built since Nixon and Peg. And we're seeing a massive power shift over to from credit to hard assets again. And gold is at the lead of that because it's also part of the power shift that's occurring. Right. And so one of the indicators that I'm looking at is look at what's happening with Japan. The Japanese carry trade was the basis of the debt bubble that we built starting around, in the mid 80s, early 90s, where people were borrowing against lower rates in Japan, reinvesting in the U.S. But that was a carry trade that Japan was dependent on the U.S. Now everything's unwinding. Well, on top of that unwinding is not the yen carry trade, but all the derivatives and everything else that's on top of everything, right? So the fact that interest rates on the long end are running higher is a big problem for central banks because it signals that they've lost control, right? They can lower interest rates as much as they want to zero back again, but at the long end of the curve, the only way to control that is going to be to print money. Right. And that's what always happens at the end of a debt cycle when the big blow off top starts. Right. That's why I keep posting that chart of the Weimar Republic when gold finally goes exponential. Because all that's happening at that point is not that gold is going exponential, is that the central bank is forced to print money like crazy just to support the bond market, to support the social environment that we created. Like we're spending money like fools, but where's that money coming from? From taxpayers. We don't have it. We're just printing. It's all debt, right? So people better figure out that, oh yeah, we're living in this great socialist system, but how are we paying for it? You know, as Maggie Thatcher said, socialism works great until you run out of other people's money. Well, people themselves have figured out that they run out of our money and they're using our money, right? And so that's why gold is so important, because it acts always has acted as that as an amazing hedge against bad governments or bad government policy of spending money they don't have. And that's why gold is rising. But also on the other side, so our interest rates, which is a massive problem, right? I was reading a report that in Canada, we're shifting rates. There's a big renewal of mortgages coming in January, where the bulk of the lockups was around 1.5 and the new reset is at 4.25. Well, guess what? A lot of people are not going to be able to afford that mortgage once it resets. That's what happened in 08. You know, it's not rocket science. We have a debt problem. And that's why I've always said that Latin America is a great example for what has been happening as to how to position yourself going forward, because these things always unwind in the same fashion. Credit has to be supported. The only way to support it is for the Venezuelan central bank, for the Argentinian central bank, for the Cuban central bank, for just to print money. And that's what they're doing. That's what they're going to do. And in relation to that, the value of fiat of the currency is going to devalue. And so going forward, what happened through this year, we have Trump pushing strings with tariffs. He's creating a lot of instability within the global system. We have government making promises that they can't afford all over the place, which is affecting their long-term rates, which again is killing the currency. So everything around us is for the destruction of the money. So how do you position yourself there? Well, that's why gold in those environments does the best. Now, in my opinion, silver's doing the best, because that's the one that's catching up. That's a slinky at the end of the, that's a tail of the slinky. That's finally, you know, you couldn't suppress the price anymore because of the fundamental changes that are happening to silver. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But in the main picture, what we're noticing is that transition, right? At the beginning of the year, I said that I thought that Trump's policies would align better with China than with the Western governments. Well, that's starting to happen. Look at the fight with Ukraine and NATO and him wanting to pull out, because we can't afford it. You know, the big fight with Antonin, which is a key element because the Chinese produce it. Well, you need Antonin to make bullets. Well, if you can't make bullets, how are you going to go fight wars? Right. I love this, the socialist rhetoric or the narrative. Yeah, we're going to go fight the Russians, but we don't have the weapons to fight them. All we can do is print money and a lot of hot air. So, you know, in that environment, we're seeing the whole structure of the government fall apart and it's in transition. How does it end at the other side? I don't know. You know, I don't have a crystal ball that's good, but I can tell you that it is unwinding. And I can tell you one thing for sure, that history teaches that. That going through these periods, like 33, like in the 1970s, it's always best if you're following the yellow brick road, gold, because that's the one asset base that protects your wealth from the loss of purchasing power. And everybody should be feeling that. They probably don't understand it, but things are getting more expensive. It's not that things are getting more expensive, it's that the Canadian dollar, the US dollar, the pound that you're spending is losing its purchasing power.
Well, and to extend that thought a little bit more, I was reading an interesting article yesterday that just makes you think a little bit more about that entire situation and what it actually does to us. So if you sell your gold and silver, you now have to pay capital gains taxes on the devaluation of that government's currency. Right? Like you have to pay a tax on their devaluation of that currency. So it's like, it's such a double-edged, like not a double-edged sword, but you're getting it from both ends, where your currency is being devalued and you have to pay the tax on that. It's just such a wild situation when you really step back and understand what happens to your currency and the value of, let's say, your savings because of somebody else's decisions.
Right. Well, it's funny you say that, because just this morning I was chatting with a client that called me. You know, he's in his 70s. His account is done extremely well, but he says, hey, I want to buy a $60,000 car. right? But I also like my investments. What should I do? And I said, well, you know what? The best thing to do is borrow the money. Go to the bank, borrow the money to pay for the car because you're borrowing fiat. Against that, that fiat's going to continue to devalue anyways, right? So you're going to pay what, 6%? But the devaluation on the fiat is going to be greater than that, which means that the appreciation on the other asset is going to be greater than that because it's a balancing act. So when you're making decisions, like for example, with younger people that are looking to purchase a condo, I'm not dissuading them from it. If you can have the savings to have that down payment, then go for a long-term rate, right? Because again, you're borrowing fiat. Yes, the price of the condo might drop a bit more and you might as well rent for a bit and see where it settles, but you're gonna have a lot of opportunities. You know, I know that personally because the best deal that I did in 2008, 2009 was the fact that I sold my cottage in the spring of 2008 and bought it was a 1500 square foot cottage. But at the bottom of the cycle in 2009, I bought a 4,500 square foot home for the same dollar amount in Collingwood.
Yeah.
People don't realize how much real estate prices crashed at that point, right? And so it's about positioning. It's about understanding that there is an economic storm that's hitting us already, and how do you position yourself, which is the important thing, right? And it is the big, at the big picture, is the devaluation of all fiat around the world, which is what, if you look at every chart of long-term interest rates rising, going through the roof, and the price of gold going through the roof, there is a connection. You know, to understand that when the 10-year bond in Japan hit zero 4 years ago or 5 years ago, you know, gold was at $1,400. Or if, I guess it was 6 years ago. Now we're sitting here, gold in Japanese yen is going through the roof. It's accelerated at a much faster pace than gold in U.S. dollar, in the same way that gold in Canadian dollars is accelerated at a faster pace than gold in U.S. dollars. Because again, the U.S. dollar, the Canadian dollar, the Japanese yen, they're all fiat in the monetary Titanic, and it's drowning in credit. And the lifeboats is gold that's still floating up on top. The other one's just measuring how far off the surface are we. Mm-hmm. And so the real question going forward is how high is gold going, right? And that, it's funny, there was a chart I sent you that Tavi Costa put out that I thought was the best chart that I could have found because it kind of gives us a peg as to where we're going, right? And it was the chart of, there it is, of the fact that, and before we talk about this chart, do understand that this is just central banks who are positioning themselves, pension plans, normal banks, everybody else, the Chinese are positioning themselves through their financial institutions, but the West isn't. They still don't see it. So what is this? So this is gold reserves by central banks have finally surpassed U.S. treasuries with a value right now of about, I think it was $1.5 trillion within the treasury holdings, right? Now, in essence, what they're doing is they're replacing their old credit in U.S. dollars versus gold reserves. But we've just cleared $1.5 trillion. Let's not forget that the U.S. alone has $35 trillion worth of U.S. debt that will never be paid back. And globally, between all the governments, we're looking at $350 trillion. Well, all that credit has to wealth transfer over to real assets. That process is what's playing out. So if we've just hit $1.5 trillion, or even if you use all gold in the world, which is about $35 trillion, we still have tenfold to 100-fold to go for that full devaluation of debt to occur, right? And that's why I've always said that for gold to do what it must do, it will have another zero, be it 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000, I don't know. But it doesn't matter. I just know that I started preparing for this at $900 gold, and I've been continually maintaining my allocations and playing with those allocations. And I think that's what people have to understand, that the U.S. dollar as we knew it, the U.S. treasuries, the fiat treasuries are a thing of the past. They will not be around forever. They're disappearing because all that money cannot be paid back. That is the truth. The only way to do it is to inflate it away or reset the system. And that's what we're living through, right? That was the history That was the road that history predicted years ago, for and those that understood history and economics understood that plan. It has always happened this way. Is it different this time? Perhaps. But you know what? I highly, highly doubt it by looking at what's happening right now within gold and the fact that now we've broken above 4,400, which was the old time, the October high. Well, we settled here. Everybody that was calling for price to decline, well, they were wrong. And again, that's why I don't worry about price. I worry about allocation. Forget about price. What has price done? Well, only 4% of Western wealth is currently in this one sector that will help them most to survive what's coming, and they haven't woken up yet, right? So eventually they will, and more are waking up to it. We're starting to see it in the flow of funds. The money's coming into the stocks. And the fact that if you look at reserves of physical inventories, they're getting tighter and tighter. I'm not going to buy an IOU from a bank. I'd rather own a reserve on the ground from one of my companies because I know that that gold's there. I highly don't think that, you know, my local banker's going to have my gold through that paper contract because, first of all, he's not going to want to mine it, and he's not going to go to Chile to take it out of the ground.
So really, like I was gonna ask, you know, what are the important, let's say, themes going forward into 2026? I started the interview by asking what are the biggest themes that mattered the most in 2025? Realistically, it's just this revaluation of fiat slash gold. And this is just a continuation into next year, right?
True, but you know what? It also, we have to also analyze, the problem when talking about gold is that you also have to analyze what is going on around us. Like, look at Europe. I think Europe is imploding. Look at the farmers, look at everything else. You know, you have a select few of, and you know, I'm a student of history. I love French history because my grandmother was French. I studied at the Alliance Française. And man, back to the Romans, I've been studying French history. And you know, this is the Fifth Republic. They tried five times. You know, why can't they set up a sixth republic, which is highly likely? Because right now, what you have is first of all, a bunch of socialists running the countries, but they're not reflective. Their policies are not reflective of what people want, right? They're reflective of an unelected party out of Brussels that really doesn't represent the French or the Germans, right? And what do Europeans really want? I think Europe is imploding in a debt bubble that they can't afford. Right, that's going to be quite transitionary over the next year, where that those forces are coming to the fore. I think Europe breaks up again, and you know, you're starting to see it in the fight for gold with Meloni out of Italy. I think that, you know, is that gold there? I think it's part of the lease gold that they might not have, which creates even bigger problems. But I think Europe itself is in a period of retransition. The U.S., same thing, is in a period of redefining themselves. You know, they have to internalize. I don't think the U.S. can continue on with all of these expansionary wars. I don't think Trump really wants it. And whether we like him or not, he's still the guy driving the bus. So you can't, you know, you can't just put your head in the sand and forget about him. You know, he is creating a lot of chaos, which is good for gold. It's not good for the dollar, but Scott Bessent has already told, the new Treasury Secretary has told us, that they want to revalue the balance sheet. So that is coming, I think, right? It's whether the gold is there or not that's really important, right? And who's going to be blamed if it isn't? That's the other side, right? However, at the end of the day, as investors, what can we do? You know, I think having an allocation in gold is important. I think silver has been the better trade. And we've been talking about silver for almost a year and a half because we were repositioning over to silver. Silver has a lot more room to go. You know, again, with silver, I don't worry about the price. $65, $70, that's nothing to me because I'm looking at the relationship between the price of gold to silver, right? We've just cleared, what, 65-1 gold-silver ratio? That's nothing. You know, so anybody that's telling me, oh, the price ran up to 65, 70, it's going to pull back, I don't care. It's not going to manage my allocation. My allocation's solid, strong, and I'm holding on to every one of my companies. What's really cool is the stock selection of those companies. One of them was just chosen by Samsung to do an offtake agreement. That's good stock picking. we have five or six companies that are actually acquiring other companies, right? So they're also the sharks within the selection. They all have massive leverage, right? So stock selection criteria is working really well. But how do you manage that, right? And that's the important thing, that the when it comes to silver, silver is just catching up. First of all, because we had a structural deficit for 6 years because for some reason the price doesn't increase, right? So nobody was building silver mines. So we have 6 years worth of deficit where the demand is 1.2 billion ounces a year, but we've only been producing 900 million ounces. Well, hey, the pipers come to be paid now, and they're scrambling, figuring out, oh, what's going on, right? The price is running and it's going to pull back. Sure, it might pull back for a day, but hey, I think it's going a lot higher, because 900 million ounces of production versus 130 million ounces of gold production, that's an 8-to-1 gold silver ratio. And it's the mining ratio that has always set the price of gold. So I've always said, well, silver is the better opportunity because now that demand is kicking in. So we have a structural deficit just from the regular production demand for technology. Now we have new technologies coming online. The Samsung solid state battery is going to completely revamp the EV electric vehicles and all electric, because of how efficient it is. It charges in 9 minutes and goes for 900 kilometers, something like that. Like, it blows away lithium, but it's not going to be cheap. So yes, the masses can have their lithium.
To be fair, like, I always want to kind of, let's say, temper expectations on things like this.
No, hold on. Give me 1 second, because I was going to go with something else. All that's important is that that's a new technology. Solid state technology that we're going to see more and more of those because of the qualities of silver as a conductor of electricity. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that now, we have the monetary demand that's kicking in, where people are finally waking up. They're running to Costco to buy gold at $6,000 a little ounce, when in the meantime, they can $90 for the same ounce of silver. Mm-hmm. So now you can buy that many more. You can buy 65 ounces of silver. So that's both of those demands, just the monetary side demand, which is happening in China, it's happening in India, is taking these inventories even lower. And we don't have the manufacturing there, right? So it's the imbalance that we created that now needs to be cleaned up. So the real question when it comes to silver, how high does the price have to go to offset at least 6 years worth of production? Well, it's got to be a lot higher than 65 so that we can finally start building mines at a much faster pace than in 20 years, right? So that's why I'm more bullish of silver. But silver, again, it's a relationship to gold. How high is gold going? I think gold from this point should add another zero, but let's call it $10,000, mm-hmm. right? Which is a realistic number from here, right? For when we were sitting at $1,500 gold, to say $10,000, oh, you're crazy. At $4,400, I'm not that crazy, right? But at $10,000 gold, even call it 30-to-1 gold-silver ratio, $3,000. So the percentage increase on silver is going to be much greater than the percentage increase in gold, which is what I've always said. Bitcoin could go to 1 million from 100,000, right? Or 890, in the same way that gold could also go from add another zero behind it. But silver will be the winner because of the imbalances that we created and the price fundamentals that need to be there, because silver is a very important metal. It's not only critical because we haven't been mining any, but it's also important because it's the most important electronic metal, for especially for a green future.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the big themes in silver are, as you mentioned, Samsung making this announcement about these solid state batteries. Again, this is a technology that's been around for a long time, and it's just maybe been or it has been uneconomical to have at a consumer level up until maybe now. And that's what I just wanted to say earlier, is that is a technology that has existed for a long time, but I want to believe it when I actually see them start producing these batteries rather than this one announcement from them. I just want to
I
see
fully
more of
agree. I fully
a
agree. But I
solid.
think what's more important is the fact that they have done an offtake agreement, right? That is the precedent. It's not the fact what the offtake agreement is for. It's the fact that now we have the manufacturers going straight to the silver companies and saying, "Hey, can we sign a deal?" That is key because, in essence, the manufacturers are not believing the bullion banks that they can give them the silver. That is the critical point that people should be understanding, is the fact that this paper facade that has been pitched to us all of these years is losing trust, right? Why is gold the best hedge against governments? Because it's those empty promises that politicians are able to do thanks to the bankers that are backing them. Well, where's that money going to come from, right? And that's the important announcement. It's not the fact that they're going to be using silver, or how much silver they're going to use. It's the fact that they're saying, you know what, we can't trust the COMEX and we can't trust the LBMA to deliver that. We got to jump ahead of that curve and get on front of that. That is
Because
the
we
key
don't want our
system.
production to be slowed by a metal that realistically they don't really care what it costs at this point, because it's a
Or
that input cost
we
is
want to
so
make
much
sure that
lower.
we get it because we can't trust those guys to get it to us. That is the key message,
Well,
right?
and this is a big theme going forward, right? China next year, in January, starting to restrict exports of silver. The
Right. And
US.
it puts us, and it also brings up another key change of 2025 going forward in the fact that the Shanghai Exchange now is setting the price. He who sets the price controls the power. And he who has the gold sets the price, number one rule of power, right? So again, there's another critical shift within the whole global structure that we can't trust the British and the Americans, the LBMA and the COMEX to deliver. Now that already started cracking a while ago, and people might think I'm out to lunch, but hey, look at what happened with nickel 2 years ago, right? When they had a force majeure. They had a force majeure on silver in that midnight shutdown of the system because JP Morgan needed to get its silver out and we need to have a short circuit of the system. Yeah, they turn it off so that the plebs can stay with outside of the system while they move the physical out and move their trading over to Singapore, which is also a very important signal to me because Singapore is the Asian hub and that's where the physical is being traded, right? Which is interesting because those guys always grab the lifeboats. The right lifeboats and leave everybody on the ship, right? Again, I keep thinking out of the box. You know, it's funny because the big issue, I think, for investors is that advisors still don't get it. They're still working on that easy, let's park some money here and there. I don't care what I'm parking it in. That parking lot is fine and safe, but the foundations of that parking lot are crumbling. Look at JP Morgan when they moved over. When the another big announcement through 2025 was JP Morgan saying that they're switching their allocation from 60-40 to 60-20-20-20 in precious metals. Right now, I have everybody at 30, so I'm working on an even greater level than that. It was nice to see 20. From Morgan Stanley, sorry, on the asset allocation. But the question is, if they're moving that, where's that coming from? They have 1.6 trillion in assets. A 20% is a huge amount of global gold production on an annual basis, right? If they're going to give them paper credits, I would be very worrisome as a client of Morgan Stanley. I want to see it. I want physical stored, and I also. The only other way to get it is through the producers and their reserves on the ground, right? So again, everything that history predicted is actually playing out. People should be able to see it by now. Like we have enough of the curtain pulled back that we can start to assess where we're heading. It's very profitable for those that can enter now and get set up, but it's about allocation, right? Because at the end of the day, it's a wealth transfer of all this credit, $350 trillion worth of credit that will not be paid back. It's going to disappear. A lot of that is sitting in your pensions, in the money that you're depending for retirement. Well, all that is going to evaporate as it transfers over to gold and silver again, because that's how monetary systems work. That's why gold is king. Gold is money. It's the one thing that governments trust. The fact that central banks are grabbing it should turn on a light in people's head. And the fact that the Canadian government doesn't have any should also turn on a light, which is maybe why gold in Canadian dollars is at $6,000, right? You know, I'm seeing all kinds of posting about how battered government is on Twitter, on X, right, about, I don't care. I'm sitting on a lot of gold at $6,000. At least now I'm in a position of strength watching the storm play out. And as for capital gains, as you said, well, you know, it's about making the decisions. I'm not going to sell. I'm not selling my producers. I'm holding on at very cheap prices, but I'm going to hold on to it because I think at some point in the future, the government might change. Look at what's happening in Chile. My, you know, it's funny because born in Chile, I used to have my very strong ties there. Well, they've gone right. I know that there's sanity in the world out there, right? And Chile is key because that's where a lot of our mining assets are, in Argentina, Chile, Peru, and everybody seems to be turning in the right way down there, which it's hopeful. You know, it means that some people are thinking out there.
I mean, when you think about, you know, you just mentioned the Canadian government and the fact that they don't own any gold, how do you consider them looking at the importance of gold, and especially the importance of your gold, as we move forward through this shift of the devaluation of their
I don't think they the care. Currency? I don't think they care because their mindset is, oh, we have all the money in the world because we can just print it and use other people's money. The last thing they're thinking about is about money, right? That's the mindset of every four cycle, the four turnings, right? At the top of the cycle, lights won't come on until after the crash. Whatever crash in the credit, in the value of things occur, that's when people are going to finally going to wake up that, oh, maybe I didn't build a good house, right? I made it of straw instead of bricks, right? And so I don't think the government cares. Government policy, you know, isn't very helpful. They're making a lot of mistakes. That creates opportunities if you know how to shelter yourself and wait for that time to pass. And that's my strategy. My strategy is to just continue to position clients to benefit from what is happening. You know, it's funny, our conservative, our equity income portfolio just returned over 40%, but that's designed to just beat the TSX. Last 3 years, it hadn't beaten it. It was just performing a little bit lower than that because the pressure to 30% in precious metals in producers that we had in there hadn't kicked in yet. Well, all of a sudden it kicked in. And as we rebalance, all we're doing is picking up more income, more cash flow, right? But that also gives us the opportunity to wait out the storm from a position of strength and continue to build assets as everything else continues to rebalance, because where we're taking advantage is of all this equity that's finally starting to come in. And it's nothing in terms of where we're going because of the market cap value of the sector, still anemic, right? You're buying massive earnings at very cheap prices, which to me is a positive. We're nowhere near a halfway to NVIDIA in terms of craziness, or Nortel for the Canadian crowd, where 30% of the TSX runs Nortel. You know what? I think the overall, all of the gold and silver producers is what, 2% of the TSX, maybe 3%, if anything, that we've got a lot of room to go before we even get into any kind of mania, because people haven't yet woken up to what is the state of affairs. And I think after this year, the lights finally come on, but 2026 is going to get worse. I don't think it's going to get better unless you're properly positioned. For us, I think it's going to be very, very good because now, you know, we're heading higher. It's the I think Trump has this coming year until November for the election, for the Senate. You know how they happen every 2 years.
The midterm.
So I think he's just going to push as much as possible, especially in Q1 and Q2, to get his policies out of the way, and those are going to create more chaos, which is great because chaos is good for the things I'm invested in.
Yeah. As long as you're positioned, it's great. But
correct.
You know, inherent in that, Jaime, there's a point at which, and you mentioned the word mania, when you are positioned and things are getting crazy, your portfolio is going up like crazy, how do we manage our emotions in that very specific time period?
Follow my tweets.
To avoid going back down the other side and round tripping.
You know what? I think, first of all, you got to hold fast. And that's why allocation's key, right? I always say have at least 30% of your portfolio in that area. If you know, you start with 30% and all of a sudden you get 4 or 5 months out and it's become 45%, trim back. That's the discipline. Take the emotion out of the equation, right? So it's not fear or greed making your decision. It's just a reallocation. That is 80% of a portfolio's long-term return comes from that process of asset allocation, reallocating. You know, we reallocate into a lot of energy companies that oil's down, but the yields are still there. They're maintaining their yield. You know, I love Petrobras, for example, as an example. Brazil's ready to cook higher. And the yields, what, on Petrobras, something like 8%, which is great to sit on, and especially in a RIF or on a registered account. But I don't get emotional, right? We're just removing into other sectors of the economy, pipelines, utilities, things that they can't duplicate that are going to have benefit, right? And on the way down within the precious metals, we're doing the same thing, maintaining that 30% position, but adding more and more shares, right? So even through that period where everybody said, oh, I'm not buying these stocks, they don't go anywhere, we took that out of the equation. It was a process, right? So to have a process by which you're going to manage going forward, I think is important. And that's why maintaining an asset allocation model, in my experience over the last, you know, maybe over 30 years, I guess, since I've been in the business, I think it's going to be, anyways, it doesn't matter. That's a long time. Asset allocation has always saved the day, that because it takes that emotion away. Now you need patience, but as long as you're buying good quality companies that are solid behind them, you're going to do great. You're going to do well. And a good advisor also helps, right? But somebody that's just not parking assets. The problem with advisors today is that they are just parking assets in pools that they don't understand what's in the pool and how the pool is constructed. Like, is it built with derivatives? I bet you the average advisor wouldn't know whether the ETFs that they've been buying has shares or derivatives of shares, which is a big problem, because if those derivatives, the IOU of that derivative is not there to give you the money at some point, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have nothing, right? And so that's why I prefer owning shares, understanding exactly what I own, why I own it, and gold and silver are key within that, especially the companies and the physical, because it offers a tangible wealth that has surpassed 4,000 years of history, right?
So, Jaime, you know, you mentioned this idea of understanding what you own and, let's say, why you own it, these solid producers. Explain to us why, the why of buying a particular company and understanding exactly what that company holds.
Okay, first of all, I use 4 criteria when selecting my companies. Geopolitical risk is key. Where are those companies sitting? The management, reserves on the ground, and their cost of production. That's for producers. Mm-hmm. The others are on the exploration side. Their geological team is key and where they're looking, right? If you can start sorting out through those, you start to find the right producers and the right selection of producers, right? Then you have the big boys like Agnico Eagles at the top. Same thing with First Majestic. I'd rather own both of those than the Barricks and the Kinross, because again, I see them like governments, just a lot of bureaucracy. They make bad decisions. Lundin Gold's a great example of a slim, ready to go company, unlike the fat ones, right? Like Kinross. Now at $4,400 gold, they're all gonna make money. Don't get me wrong, but the other ones are going to outproduce. On the exploration front, that is a little bit different. That's not part of the portfolio. But we've done very well because it sticks to the same thing. So right now, and it's going public on Wednesday, keep an eye on it, Algo Grande. It was a spin-off out of Minorum, right? Areas where Minorum is a beautiful play because it's a mine that was already found that was shut down in the early 1900s, high-grade silver. There were three mines. Now they're figuring out how much more is there, putting new technology to define that resource, right? How much more is there? Well, within that basket of companies that Peter McGough, who built MAG Silver, had put together, right? There's a lot of pieces in there, and one just went public. Well, we added assets to that because we like the geological team. We like the prospects that they've had already drilled and found copper gold, right? And I like the fact that it was already permitted. Permitted is key, right? That's one of the keys to Minorum. It's the permits, right? Companies that have the permits. Same thing with another one in Argentina, right? Argenta, another one where it was an amalgamation of properties, right? And now we have a massive block of a silver deposit that keeps getting bigger and bigger. Right. So again, you got to be very specific as to where you're buying. We invested into a Peruvian silver producer that's getting restarted. Very cheap prices. One of the metrics that I look at. So I was looking at Hycroft because everybody, that was the big talk last week because Eric Sprott mentioned it on his call, right? Now, I don't own Hycroft, so I wanted to analyze it. I did hear about it a couple of years ago, and I'm, just like San Cristobal and another one in Bolivia that the guys at Prescott are doing really well on, and they had offered it to me, but I didn't participate. You're not going to buy all of them. You just got to make sure that you pick some good ones, right? But I was looking at Hycroft, and it made a lot of sense. You're buying the company right now at $2.80 to 280 for the silver on the ground already found. With silver $60, that makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot of room to continue to explore. So that I think it's great. But I have a number of companies that are on the same boat, right? We have some that we bought that silver on the ground already found at a cheaper price, like in pennies to the dollar, which made a lot more sense in the other ones I purchased. But again, even at $2.80 is still, to me, seems like pretty good value for something that can continue to grow the asset. And it's in the US. I've been adding assets in the US, and we're very happy with the ones we've been adding. But even there, I'm looking at Americas Gold and Silver, and Galena, I've always owned that company. I've always loved it. And I mentioned it on BNN a couple of times years ago. And I still hold a big position in Americas Gold and Silver because of the Galena mine. It's in the US. Well, they just bought Crescent and they paid $2.80 for the silver on the ground already found. So again, but this is with production, right? Hycroft is $2.80, but they just have to finish building the mine. It's in development. It'll take a while before they start producing still. So I think Crescent was a better buy. So again, those are the matrices that I'm looking at. Where are the deposits? Who are the management teams? What are the costs of those reserves? That's key. And how much upside potential will there be, right? And the nice thing now is that since we've been adding for the last 4 or 5 years, we're really taking profits from others and buying the adding to these from a position of strength. I think that Argenta is a great example of that. We're selling, taking a little bit of profit from Argenta at a much higher silver on the ground than when we get in, and buying others with the silver on the ground cost exactly where we were in Argenta a year ago, right? So that kind of substitution is what I'm looking for because there's still a lot of benefits in that the money's just trickling in, right? You have certain projects out there that are over. I don't think anything's overpriced right now. Again, for Hycroft, $2.80 to me, it's a great deal with silver at $60, and the reserves on the ground coming on. Those reserves on the ground are the key because those are going to be worth a lot of money. Let's go back to silver and the deficits. Well, if we have 6 years worth of production deficits, what are those reserves on the ground going to be worth when people wake up to the fact that, wait a minute, how long does it take to build a mine, right? So the street money is going to start to make that assumption that I've been looking at for so long, and the reality is that these companies are still cheap, the whole sector.
I mean, there's a couple important points there. Is basically these miners that have permits versus reserves in the ground. Do you prioritize one of those or over the other?
Yeah, you have to set them in baskets, right? So look at what happened with Scottie over this year. Scottie Resources, right? They had all Brad Rourke's done a great job at amalgamating all of these properties in British Columbia, and all of a sudden they got a re-rating in that. Now it's a full development project. It could easily, and so it jumped like 50 cents to a buck 70, I think it is right now. But it's because it had that re-rating in that it went from exploration and reserves on the ground to now it's going into a developer. Hycroft's a developer already. So what you got to look at is where are they in terms of the exploration of all this versus how far are they to development? Then it becomes another play. Once they're producing the once they're in development of a mine coming into production. Like, so look at Kuya, look at PPX, look at all those companies that have started production over the last year. All of a sudden, they had a re-rating because now they're producing. Now comes the big, now comes the cash flow, right? And so it's the stages of development of each one of these projects. My approach is have a nice solid base. This is why in the precious metals portfolio, so the special opportunities portfolio, which is 80%, it's mostly all producers. Because the Agnicos, the producers are key because those guys are already generating cash flow. That to me is where everybody should start building a foundation. In the income portfolio, it's 30% of production. The other one is for somebody that's happy with RBC Dominion and they're not buying any, but somebody says, hey, I know that I got to have a 5% allocation. Here it is. That's strictly producers, right? There's only two developers in there. The companies that are developing because the projects are so big. The development that happens outside of the portfolio. Same thing with the exploration. But you gotta understand in terms of every client, the foundation, you gotta have your producers and then add the others and let it build. Right?
I mean, silver has now is now worth more than a barrel of oil. This has only happened one other time in history. How do you see the importance of energy and energy producers and energy infrastructure within, or and how do you express that within your portfolio?
Well, first of all, in the income portfolio, I do like energy. Energy is important. Oil prices, when I saw that announcement, the first thing that popped into my head is that that's oil in US dollars, right? Well, it's probably dropped that, but the rest of the world, are they still buying oil in US dollars? Like, how are the Chinese paying for oil? How are the Indians paying for oil? Right, I think the gold component is also taken in, and it's a signal that the purchasing power of the new alternatives like gold and silver is just buying that much more oil, and they're able to control the market a little bit more. Oil will always be necessary, energy will always be necessary, but I do believe that at some point the green environment, like I think we need more nuclear power. I think nuclear is key. I love what's happening with thorium, what's happening with these mini nuclear plants that are being built. I also like what's happening with fusion, right? So the whole energy complex is changing. Oil itself, is it in a transition? I don't think so. But I do want to own the oil companies. I do want to own the gas companies, right? Especially the pipelines. You don't but again, it's am I going to put all my money in oil? No. Within that portfolio, we have 5 to 7% in energy, 5 to 7% in pipelines, which they just ship stuff, right? But and we're not building any. Look at the problem that we have in Canada with pipelines. They all go south. So Ontario, might not want to buy American oil, but we got to buy American oil because our oil doesn't make it to Ontario. It goes south, then we refine it in the U.S., and then we buy it, right?
They go south in more ways than one.
Exactly, exactly, right? So I can't help the bad policies that were in place. You just got to look at the whole environment, right? I also when it comes to banking, we do have a banking and finance company, and it's in India. It's a Fairfax India play, right? I'd rather own India. I'd rather own Brazil. Mm-hmm. I think the BRICS, that's where the new economies are coming along. And I think we're going to see a transition of wealth happening over there, right? So energy is important. Canada is a hub, but we're not producing it. We're not encouraging it, which I think it's silly. It's bad policy because, you know, look at what's happening in Germany. Volkswagen had to shut down, right? Just how long have they been around, right? So are those good policies? You know, we keep electing these people, then I guess the masses think that they are great policies that we're implementing. I don't think so, but I can't do anything about it. I'm only one vote. What I can do is vote with my wallet as to how I position myself and position clients. And that's what's more important, right? How to milk the transition of money that is happening. Because again, I always go back to what Monty Gordon taught me, the Gordon of Gordon Capital. You know, assets are just a blob on a platter. That blob would grow, and it's grown to $350 trillion, but it's always moving from one side to the other. And then it also will shrink at some point, and now it's shrinking, moving over from the credit side to the precious metal side. And that transition, I think, is amazing because it is unleashing amazing wealth as it comes to my side of the equation. So I position myself where the puck was going, not where it's been, which is what most people are saying. As much as we love Wayne Gretzky here in Canada, nobody listens to him.
I mean, the Japanese 10-year yield has recently broken through 2%, 2.088 as at the time of recording here. I remember a tweet from Peter Schiff specifically saying that a financial catastrophe could happen when the JGB 10-year breaks 2%. How, like, are you worried, or do you consider the Japanese carry trade as we go into the next year here?
I think the Japanese carry trade, the one thing that people don't understand is their interconnectivity of the credit cycle around the world. All of these institutions are connected because of credit and debt and derivatives and everything else. So yes, he is right, right? What I find more bullish is what's happening to gold in Japanese yen, which is at an all-time high. So again, gold in Japan is signaling that. Now, I tweeted something throughout this year at some point because when it crossed 2%, because I remember in the fall of 1993, as I was shutting down, they closed the bond desk in October of 93 at Gordon. And I remember doing some Japanese carry trade because we were borrowing, and the Japanese 10-year was at 4%, mm-hmm. right? So it's funny that it's at 2 again after hitting 0, but it is going back up to 4. So, you know, that chart is heading higher because credit is, nobody wants that credit. The Japanese don't want it. Well, the Japanese need it because that's how they're going to fund the retirement of all their pensioners. But the world doesn't want to buy it, right? And so nobody, we're overwhelmed with credit that we just don't need. So we got to deal with that, right? And so the fact that it's at 2% now, you know, again, look at the 10-year bond in the U.S., right? The 10-year bond right now, it's at, and again, the 10-year bond is important at 4.16 because it sets mortgages in the U.S. and borrow rates. Well, that's also following higher, right? It hasn't cracked 4%, right? Everybody was saying that as the rate cycle started, they were going to drop it. You know, it was going to come back down to 3%. Well, we're still sitting at 4. And the 30-year bonds are 4.83, looking to go above 5, right? So again, that's the bigger signal is that not just the Japanese carry trade are going higher in yield. And again, when yields rise means that bond is losing value, right? So the fact that the 30-year bond hasn't corrected is very a bullish signal for my trade, which is credit, which is gold, right? Because that is why gold is rising, not because that's why central banks hold it, because they understand that the credit bubble is bursting, right? And the Japanese carry trade is just, to me, is 40 years of building a bubble that is so big that people haven't even been able to comprehend how big it is, right? And that's why gold right now at 4,400, well, it's just starting to signal what a trillion is. And we got to price in 350 of those, not just one.
Yeah, and I mean, again, just to give people some context, if you spent a dollar per second, it would take you some, I think the number is 33,710 years to spend a dollar per second to spend a trillion dollars. And you're talking about, scores of trillions.
Well, you know what? Then another thing that's funny is when we talk about the stars, the astronomers never talk about trillions of stars. You know, they're always a billion stars. That's it. It's unbelievable, right? That bubble that's being built. And again, this is not about gold. This is about debt. It's about credit, right? And that's what people better understand, that gold's going higher, silver's catching up, and this road is set, right? And it's getting more expensive. This is financial insurance, and when it comes to gold, it's expensive. Silver's getting more expensive, and next come the producers. The producers are catching up. Like, we're having an amazing day today. I'm looking at my portfolios as we're having this discussion, and 7%, 6%, 7%, 10%, 12%, and 17%, and one is up 20% today. Unbelievable. Right. So it's nice to be sitting on the right side of the trade, but that took 3 years, 4 years of patience to continually build it.
I
And that's
like.
the hard part. And that's why the one thing I would advise investors that are just observing this, forget that noise about price. Just start building your allocations. Start looking, again, I'm going to mention two, Agnico Eagle, First Majestic, park some money in there. Hecla, even, park some money, start building an allocation, and just forget about them. Get yourself to at least 30%. Everybody's at zero. Start with 1%, 2%, baby steps, but get going.
I like the way that you put that, Jaime, about the idea that the price of monetary insurance is increasing with risk, right? As it sees more risk, the price of that insurance is increasing.
The last 3 years, I kept pointing out, well, are things getting better or not? Like, why would I sell my gold? Things aren't getting better. Well, if anybody tells me that things are better over the last 4 years, well, sell me some of that hopium that you're drinking.
Well, Jaime, I
So
think that.
for the year ahead, I think that we've crossed the Rubicon. Things are definitely accelerating going forward. The geopolitical risks that we've been talking about forever are accelerating. There is a power shift happening. I think it's becoming undeniable. Like, look at the UK. Nobody really cares about Keir Starmer or whatever he says. Even the Brits are losing faith. How much benefit, even von der Leyen, the European leader, who hasn't even been elected, is being called out, right? So all of these structures are crumbling, are being rethought, repositioned. All that create instability. All that requires a restructuring of everything we've been doing, especially from a financial side. And what's important when you understand these periods of history where everything's up for reevaluation, for rebuilding, gold is in the mix. Why? Because it's the ultimate form of monetary trust. And that's all that's important. It's been with us for 4,000 years. And if you think it's different this time, fine, stay the course, but I'm going the other way. I'm following the yellow brick road, wearing silver slippers. And don't forget that the yellow brick road was an allegory about another financial crisis so that we don't do it again.
Well, Jaime, I think that's a good place to wrap up. I mean, you've used the term yellow brick road, follow the yellow brick road for many years. And I think for those that had the foresight to be able to buy that monetary insurance at that time, are going to be very happy with that. So, I really appreciate all your contributions, to the conversation in 2025, and look forward to a prosperous and excellent 2026. Although it might be chaotic, when we have understood a lot of these concepts, which you've been very helpful with, I think that is extremely useful for people in their ability to weather that chaos.
Well, as they say, the Chinese say, may we live in interesting times, right? And don't forget that they write the word danger with crisis and opportunity. And I've always concentrated on the opportunity. I want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. Enjoy your families through this period. Happy Hanukkah to our Jewish friends. And enjoy your families and get ready for 2026. It should be fun. It should be very interesting, and position yourselves accordingly. Thank you, Tom. It's always great. You've been doing great work, just yeoman's work. So amazing.
I
Hold
appreciate
fast
it.
to all the silver bugs. Hold fast.
Absolutely. Of course, for those that want to follow more of Jaime, it's at IJ Carrasco on X and Jaime Carrasco on LinkedIn. Jaime, thanks so much for your time. Merry Christmas, man.
Thank you.